Good morning, everybody. I'm glad to kick things off this morning. I hope it's a great session. So this morning I'm going to talk about soil health through the lens of cropping system diversity and focus in on nutrient cycling in across a gradient of cropping system diversity. So in general, in natural ecosystems, there's over repeated occasions and in many ways, natural ecosystems show a strong relationship between ecosystem diversity and ecosystem processes, of species diversity and ecosystem processes. This runs the gamut of many things, but I've just listed a few: disease, nutrient cycling, and productivity. But in agricultural systems, of course, we're limited in terms of being able to use diversity to increase ecosystem processes, both spatially and temporally in the way that we manage them. But there is this strong interest in stimulating ecosystem processes, particularly soil ecosystem processes and below ground ecosystem processes, to enhance the function of these systems, in part to offset external inputs and potential downstream impacts of agricultural systems. So the big question is, how does, in this talk is going to be, how does crop rotational complexity shape or influence soil ecosystem processes? And to have a look at this, we took advantage of an experiment that's been going on for 15 years at the Kellogg Biological Station. It's an LTER. Most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with. They have a small experiment, complex but small experiment, called the Biodiversity Gradient Experiment. Biodiversity is a little bit of a misnomer because really it's a cropping system experiment. It's not a full-on biodiversity experiment, but biodiversity in the sense of agriculture, specifically row crops. And there's a few nice, unique things about this. One, it's been in place for quite a long time, 15 years at this point. There have been no chemical inputs over the course of this time in terms of fertilizer or pest management, for example. And the rotations, weed management has been managed through conventional tillage. So you can look at this in lots of different ways, right? There's a species component here in terms of temporal diversity, but there's also inclusion of cover crops as sort of complementing a temporal component to the diversity. So, it's kind of out of order. But we took, kind of compressed some hypotheses together here. Broadly speaking, we wanted to look at carbon and nitrogen pools and fluxes and how they increase over a gradient like this, with particular interest in the spatial diversity of the cover crops. And we also assumed or thought that, especially under cover crops, that the bacterial diversity would shift under cover crop management. We used a number of methods to try and examine this. Number one, if I just jump back quickly to the layout of the site, we tried to isolate our analysis to just two cropping seasons where we could just focus it on cropping history and focus in on a corn cropping portion and a soy cropping portion, so just during the growing season. And then we looked at potentially mineralizable pools of carbon and nitrogen, soil enzyme potentials, and also trace gas flux. And quickly we looked at bacterial species diversity. So if we just take a quick look at another way of looking at this gradient that looks not at species diversity but of sort of inputs, this is an estimate of NPP over sort of condensed over the 3 years of a full rotation for residue inputs. So this would be, for example, it's going to take a while to get a hang of this. The corn-soy rotation is actually similar, with not having wheat in the rotation, for example, is similar to the more complex rotations in terms of inputs. And you can see that it's actually a fairly weedy system. There's a lot of weeds that compose a substantial amount of biomass compared to just the cover crop inputs. And if we just isolate quickly a comparison of 16S diversity for both a corn year and a soy year, there is strongly different structural patterns in the 16S diversity for both under corn and soy. And broadly speaking, there's a division between the the cover crop and non-cover crop. But we didn't find any differences in diversity, evenness, or richness across these systems. So the systems restructure, but there's not a shift in what we're calling this biodiversity gradient. There's not a below-ground shift, at least in terms of 16S diversity of bacteria. So I'm going to focus more, actually, on some of the patterns and nutrient dynamics that we observed. And again, this is isolating two different cropping seasons, primarily when just the crop is in the ground. So this is sort of corn. These are the same rotations, but a corn year and a soy year, with the only exception being continuous soy and continuous monoculture corn. Okay. So here I've just focused in on mineralization of carbon mineralization. And you can see that the big difference across the rotation is really between the cover and the non-cover. This is where the differences jump out for most of the gradient. And it holds whatever crop is in the ground. So looking at bulk soil across the main part of the cropping season for two different crops. And if we look at potentially mineralizable nitrogen, the same pattern emerges. Again, just isolating it to when the crop is in the field, and looking at sort of the influence of cropping, focusing in on the influence of cropping system history. And if we look at the types of soil enzymes that break those pools down, that we think of as breaking down those pools, this is enzyme potential for beta-glucosidase across the treatment, again across four different time points in two different years. So we think of this as a sort of more labile carbon-acquiring enzyme that is, again, much higher under the cover crop treatment than the non-cover. And in the non-cover treatments, kind of just isolated to temporal diversity, there's really not a substantial difference. If we look at in-acquiring enzymes, there's sort of the same pattern, right? We kind of wanted to look at this a different way, and if we just have a look at, we combine both years, and we say, okay, so potentially mineralizable carbon is a strong proxy for microbial biomass, and if we just normalize microbial biomass to enzyme productivity, there's not really a difference across the treatments, okay? So beta-glucosidase, in-acquiring enzymes, normalized to microbial biomass, and things kind of even up a little bit, right? That's not the case when we look at oxidative enzymes. The oxidative enzymes are actually much more enhanced under the non-cover treatments, and we can see this in two different ways that I'm showing here. So again, we have this is all rotations. And as you increase complexity, but especially under the cover crop, and you normalize to mineralizable carbon, there's much higher oxidative enzyme potential. In this case, I'm measuring phenyloxidase and peroxidases. There's much higher activity of those enzymes under the non-cover treatments. And if we look at sort of an enzyme rate, take an enzyme ratio approach, the oxidative enzymes are much more active under the non-cover than the cover portion of the gradient. So, what does this carbon acquisition then mean for CO2 flux? Well, the CO2 flux, as you might expect, given the differences in inputs and the carbon acquisition patterns in enzymes, is higher under the cover crop treatments, both for a corn year and a soy year. However, they're not as strongly different as I might have expected, given the differences in potentially mineralizable carbon. So both under a corn year and a soy year, the cover crops have higher CO2 flux. But the significant difference between a given time point is not very strong. You can see that the cumulative differences are there, but there's only a couple time points where there's really a strong difference across the gradient in NC2 carbon flux, carbon dioxide flux. There's much, as you might expect, for nitrous oxide flux, there's a much pulsier pulsier, there's many more strong pulses of NTO at specific time points, both under a corn year and a soy year. Again, most of the time the differences are not very great across the gradient, but as you might expect in the spring, there's strong differences, particularly under the cover crops, for N2O flux. So what this has led to is sort of a different pattern in carbon allocation, and we think it's largely due to differences in sort of metabolic processes allocated to mineralizing carbon. And surprisingly, under the non-row crop systems, their total organic carbon over 15 years of this experiment hasn't really changed, not in any measurable way. Under the cover crops, it appears to be accruing substantially. And that's in spite of these different patterns in CO2 flux and potentially mineralizable carbon. So we've concluded that with the history of increased rotational complexity, there is obviously the shift in microbial community that appears to hold regardless of crop, but below ground diversity doesn't change in terms of bacteria. It looks like the processing of carbon differs based on cropping history, and we think that it's mostly important in terms of temporal outputs. You saw that the MPP was not strongly different of residues, was not strongly different across the gradient. But that pulse of carbon inputs, cover crop inputs, seems to create strong differences throughout the growing season that have accrued and also maintain these differences over the growing season, regardless of what the crop is in the ground. So it's sort of restructured carbon pools and fluxes. And you can see that in the sort of disproportionate metabolizing of recalcitrant forms of carbon versus more labile forms of carbon carried out by microbial biomass. So the altered flow of carbon under the cover crops has led to this soil organic carbon accumulation, and we think has altered the way that carbon flows, and it's sort of the potentials indicate there's just sort of a more pulsy system with the inclusion of cover crops as opposed to just temporal diversity of increased crop diversity. Thanks. Yeah.
Brendan, you might have mentioned this already, but the difference between the two cover crop systems, what were actually the cover crops there?
So both of them have clover, two different species of clover, and one has rye. I didn't dwell on that too much because the differences, at least in terms of what we were able to pull out, weren't great. There was a difference in poxy, actually, but I didn't show you.
So that's the legume effect, and in terms of that, I would assume would be an overwhelming. I mean, do you feel like that's a. What role did that play, I suppose, in what you saw in your.
I mean, the legume effect both, and I didn't split out the biomass, but that's the strongest effect of increased biomass from the cover. The rye doesn't tend to do as well, and it's the legume cover produces more than the rye biomass in this system. Yes?
Just following up a little bit on Steve's question, but I think in that experiment, I'm going to ask you to speculate a little bit, but I think in that experiment there's also a corn monoculture with just with a clover cover crop.
Right.
Do you think that system would end up looking more like those three cash crop, two cover crop rotation systems, or do you think that those additional cash crops also have an added benefit beyond just the inclusion of the cover crop?
I think they do. I mean, there's been some other papers on that, and if we had, there's a trade-off because there's so many different treatments in that, and we chose not to do it. But it has been shown that aggregation is strongest in the most diverse, including rotational diversity and covers. But the total carbon, for example, is the same under that non-cover. So I think under the cover with just corn, it's not that much greater. So I think there is this additive effect of crops and rotation plus cover. Yeah. Yes?
For your methods, did you use Franz Luber's method for the mineralizable carbon, and did you use the classic colorimetric enzyme assays?
For the potentially mineralizable carbon, we used kind of a modified 24-hour flux method to determine that, yeah. For the colorimetric assays, we use kind of a fluorometric approach for the enzyme assays. And I guess for the potentially mineralizable nitrogen also. Yeah. Yes?
I don't know about the question.
Yeah.
How did you measure the gases? And you might have mentioned those too. What time of year did you do all this? Was it when cover crops are growing?
We used in situ chamber method to measure N2O and CO2, and then we wanted to sort of reduce the measurements when cover crops were actually in the ground. So we tried to isolate it to just when soy and corn were in the ground, not cover crops. Yeah.
You might have mentioned this as well, but when did you take your soil samples for the CCUS?
Those were taken actually at the end of the season. The ground wasn't quite frozen yet, both in November. So there could have been it's kind of a pick your poison. There could have been a cover crop effect at that point, although I think there's been a lot of work that shows that a lot of the 16S that you pull up is, kind of dormant. Yeah. V3, V4. Yeah. Thanks. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, and then how did you terminate the cover crops? Were they plowed under?
They were plowed under. Yeah. Both years, I think it was May. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.